Hey everyone. Welcome to Site Selectors Are People Too. My name is Devin Hilsden Smith, and I have spent over a decade serving as an economic developer. It's been a challenging profession, something that I fell into, as most do. We're going to explore a little bit of that later on, but wanted to start this off, the podcast series as a whole, with this inaugural episode, briefly explaining who I am, what we're going to get into, and the purpose of this podcast. You know, there's a number of podcasts out there that focus on economic development, site selection, corporate investment decisions, but I think the one area that we've all missed would be the relationships behind the field, right? At the end of the day, site selection, economic development, yes, it comes down to data, it comes down to the numbers, it comes down to the right site, the right location that's right for the project, the prospect. It also comes down to whether or not that project or prospect is the right fit. But the way that we go about it, it's all relationship-based. Everything about this industry hinges upon relationships, no matter how you slice it. And I learned this when I first started my work in economic development at the Indiana Economic Development Corporation. That was back in the mid-2010s when I started as the regulatory affairs ombudsman for the state of Indiana. And in a nutshell, what we did in that department was we ensured that we had the relationships across the street in the government office to ensure that when projects, when corporations were considering investing in our state, no matter where in the state it may have been, we made sure that they were taken care of so that they could properly follow the rules of the law, the regulations that would apply to them. But in return, they had those personal touch points to ensure that they were able to get up and operational and start producing widgets and hiring our fellow neighbors as they expected to do. So I learned at a very early age that relationships mattered. I would literally go in and I would take air quality permitting training 101 as though I was a brand new air permit reviewer, sitting within the state's Department of Environmental Management and showing them that we weren't always just going to come to them when we had a fire drill and we needed them to expedite some sort of permitting. Instead, I wanted them to understand that I wanted a relationship with them. I wanted them to understand that we understood the pressures they went through every time we asked them to cut the permitting timeline from 150 days down to 75 days or to give special attention to a certain client, a certain company, because we were asking them to move mountains for us. And in return, we had nothing to offer on its face. But if we were able to establish those relationships and figured out where they had pressure points of their own, we were able to better craft an ecosystem where everybody came out on top. You know, at the end of the day, it comes down to creating those jobs and better economic well-being for those individuals that live, work, and play in our communities, right? Again, that's all about relationships, understanding what the communities want. What does your community want when it comes to a brand new investment, a brand new corporate citizen, employer? And so broadly speaking, this podcast, lightly titled Site Selectors Are People Too, is going to explore the human side of economic development and site selection. Yes, we're going to get into subject matter areas such as real estate and economic development and incentives, the role that those play in economic development, and what the process looks like behind the scene. But we're always going to root it in the people. The people behind the RFI, whether that be the communities that are submitting responses to RFIs, which, by the way, if you're brand new, RFI, request for information, we'll get into that, or whether that be the potentially faceless, black box, mysterious site selectors that are sending out these ridiculous requirements at first blush that we're being required to respond to. So the purpose of this podcast, like I said, is going to be for us to take a step back. We're going to take a step back. Let's take a look at the faces and the people behind the process. And so, as a matter of background, whether you're brand new to the industry, you're not even in the industry, or you're a seasoned veteran, this is going to be an explanation of site selection and economic development. Site selectors. Who are we? Economic developers. Who are we? And yes, I say we for both because, like I said, I spent a decade in economic development, but just recently, within the last year and a half, I had the privilege and the pain of transitioning to the other side of the table. I now serve as a national site selector representing corporate clients seeking industrial site selection projects. So let's get into it. Economic development, right? We're going to go ahead and demystify two critical components. We're going to look at both sides of the coin. The economic developers that respond to and position their communities for new corporate investment, as well as those consultants that are referred to as site selectors, those who represent companies that are looking to potentially invest in our communities. And by the way, because I can hear it right now, and I'm going to get better at this, I'm brand new to podcasting, but you may wonder if I'm living somewhere in Australia or in the Amazon, because you may hear a couple of birds in the background. Those would be my colleagues, Luke and Liam. They are two parakeets I've had for about 8 years now. And let me tell you what, the one thing to know about birds, you can't tell them to be quiet. So if you hear them in the background, consider that some calming white noise. And there they are. So we're going to go ahead and demystify, right? So whether you're a seasoned pro or new to the term site selection and economic development, let's break them down. Let's explore the impact these individuals have on our communities. So, site selection. It is at its core, the art of choosing a home for a corporation or for a company. Site selection is the process of identifying the ideal location for a business, a factory, or any other type of facility. We have to consider a number of different factors. We have to go through a logistics analysis, a labor analysis, infrastructure, including utilities, roads, rail, ports, air cargo hubs. We also have to look at those wide-ranging factors that are implicated when you look at the overall cost of the decision, right? We have to look at how much is the real estate going to cost. We have to look at the taxes that are going to be associated, operational expenses. At a broad, high level, we're looking at the CapEx, the capital investment, as well as the OpEx, the operational expenditures investment. And my team, we're highly focused on a very data-driven, process-oriented approach to this matter, right? So we take a look at the quantitative matters, which are the numbers, the dollar signs, the amount of people that are available, the number of cars and trucks, the traffic studies that allow us to understand whether or not our client is going to have an unbearable burden placed upon the community based on the location or whether it's going to fit. But we also take a look at the qualitative factors, the quality of what that community and our client, if married, what that's going to look like. And so who is a site selector, right? Who is a site selector? When I say that I am a site selector, who am I? Who do I work for? What do I do, right? So these professionals, we specialize in finding the perfect match between a business's specific needs, their key factors of influence, as well as a location's attributes. And we look to see how those are married up. And I'm going to consistently, as a theme throughout this entire podcast, I refer to, I kind of compare site selection as dating, right? So you're going to see this theme throughout the podcast. I kind of like to think of it as you're going through the RFI process, you're on Tinder, right? And you're swiping right, you're swiping left. Both sides are. Well, my fiance and I, we actually 8 years ago met on Tinder. And I can tell you what, my experience there was that you might swipe right on somebody because you're interested, right? You don't know yet, but you're interested from what you see. But the problem is you don't know if that person ever even saw that you swiped right. You also don't know if they did, if they swiped left on you, right? Meaning they don't want to talk to you. The industry is very similar in that regard. A lot of the times communities will submit responses to RFIs and never hear back. Never hear back. You completely and utterly feel at a loss sometimes because you will submit responses to hundreds of RFIs in a year. And my gosh, if you get, 5-10% of those to respond to you, you're swinging a pretty good batting average. It can be demoralizing at times. It can be hard to learn and figure out exactly what you've done wrong if you have done anything wrong. But back to the dating analogy. So say both sides have swiped right. That means there's some interest, right? We don't know if it's going to be the right fit. But then you start asking more questions. You start digging a little bit deeper. You go ahead and maybe you get together for that first date, also known as a site visit. And you continue to explore whether or not this relationship is one that makes sense. And maybe then you get into some preliminary commitments. That seems to be like you're in the dating process, right? You've asked, will you be my boyfriend? Will you be my girlfriend? And then you continue to explore. You continue to work on it over and over and over again with the end goal, hopefully, as long as it's the right fit, putting a ring on it. And so in this world, site selectors are those that are trying to help corporations figure out which community is going to be the right fit for this specific project, right? You may have a company like, let's name one that everybody knows about, like a Toyota, right? Well, they could have multiple different types of projects. You could have a project related to a call center for technical support. You could have a parts distribution center, which is more industrial in nature. You could have a regional headquarters or what every economic developer thinks they want, right? You could be talking about a big boy. You could be talking about an OEM, the massive sprawling campus where they actually do final assembly of the vehicles and pump those out. They roll off the finish line, the big sexy, right? But throughout that process, a site selector is hired to keep everybody honest. Everybody honest and keep the data honest as well. I've learned that as hard as it was in economic development to continuously submit over and over and respond to these RFIs with hundreds of data points that were being requested, I've learned that it was an absolute nightmare on this side of the table because as a community is submitting, one set of responses to an RFI, well, guess what? When I have 30 different communities doing the same, it's a lot of data. That is a lot of data that we have to be able to fight through. But again, back to the theme, the initial theme, there's going to be a lot of themes. I operate in terms of themes sometimes. Back to the initial theme of this entire podcast, comes down to the relationships. If an economic developer and a site selector have an existing relationship, it's very easy to pick up the phone and ask, what in the hell are you asking with this question? How do I best answer this to give you the best insight into what you're looking for? If you don't have that relationship, you're blindly trying to guess, unless the RFI is extremely well drafted, which I would hope that those out there that know my RFIs would agree that, I do my best to make it as clear and as transparent as possible. But you're guessing, you're taking shots in the dark. And so a site selector, when they get all of this data, here's what it comes down to. We are effectively trying to find order within the chaos. We're trying to find patterns. We're trying to find reasoning. We're trying to find points of analysis that make sense based on our client's key factors of influence for that specific project, right? For some projects, a massive amount of labor, a couple thousand employees, might require a very strong labor market. For others, the overall availability of huge amounts of labor may not matter, but because they're very highly skilled individuals with very specialized skill sets, it might matter more that you're closer to an institution like a university or a tech school that has programs that focus specifically on what you're looking for. Potentially you're looking for chemical engineering process managers, right? But you'll need 20 of them. You're going to go to a location where you know that there is a solid pipeline coming out of the university or the tech college that's going to feed those highly specialized skill sets versus looking at whether or not you're in the middle of a major MSA where there's a population of a couple million and you can pick and choose right for your, and I hate to say it, it's the worst term ever, but your unskilled or your lower skilled labor, right? Where you just need bodies, folks that can move widgets from point A to point B or do something where it doesn't take a significant amount of training. So site selectors throughout all of this, we analyze data and lots of it, right? If something starts to percolate, if a community starts to percolate to the top and say out of 30 sites submitted in 30 different communities, you get down to where, let's say we want to explore a little deeper, right? You want to actually ask that community if you want to explore dating, which I'm realizing that analogy is starting to break down because you're not going to actually be boyfriend, girlfriend with, you know, five different ones at one time, but you're going to go in and you're going to have that first date. So site selectors will travel either with their client or without and visit the potential sites. Take a look at them. Is what was submitted accurate? Are there more layers to that onion that need to be unraveled? You start asking the hard-hitting questions, right? And again, if you have that relationship, the site selector has the relationship with the economic developer, it's a lot easier and it's a lot more efficient to get to the heart of the matter. Does this make sense for the company and the community to put a ring on it? The final thing that site selectors will end up doing, and this is kind of the final phase, is the negotiations, right? Negotiating the incentive packages, negotiating the terms of the deal, talking to and negotiating with utilities when it comes to rates and costs, right? Talking to the tech college or the university and negotiating a plan for putting together potentially a brand new program to support the client and their needs. So we're going to go ahead at this point, now that we've explained that site selectors are effectively the matchmakers, right, between communities and companies. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to go ahead and explore what an economic developer does on the other side of the table. Okay, hey! We're back. So I've gone through some rambling. I've explained who I am, right? A decade in economic development, both at the state level as well as something I didn't mention down at a local military base reuse authority, which spans 6,000 acres. We'll get into that in another episode. Kind of started talking through and developing some themes around what we're going to be discussing, right? The relationships between the economic developers and site selectors. The fact that this entire process is like matchmaking, right? With the site selector serving as that matchmaker in the middle. We dove a little into what a site selector is, right? Or these matchmakers. We're the ones that take all of this data and we help to find order within that chaos to see if we're finding the right fit. And I wanted to be clear. It's not just about, is the community the right fit for the company's project, for their headquarters or for their OEM or for their factory? But is our client the right fit for the community as well? You know, it's a two-way street. And those who are on the other side of the table, economic developers, are those that are representing their communities and really helping us to understand and helping their communities to understand whether or not the good fit, whether or not it's a good fit, it would make sense from the community's perspective. So economic developers at their core focus on improving the economic well-being of a community. Improving the economic well-being of a community. That isn't necessarily just tied to always trying to pull in the best wages or trying to pull in the highest amount of capital investment so that the tax base grows. It also ties into, is there some sort of issue with the project that doesn't make sense for the community? You know, some communities out there are very, very deeply rooted in manufacturing, even into steel production, heavier production that may have some sort of NIMBYism, not in my backyard, NIMBY, NIMBYism, that even though the job creation might be there, the wealth generation is there, quality of life is there, maybe it impacts the quality of place such that they still don't want to go after it, right? So some communities are deeply rooted in manufacturing, and heavier manufacturing makes sense from an ethos perspective, from an environmental, from a quality of life perspective. But other communities are looking at you and going, you know what? We love the numbers behind this deal, but guys, I'm going to get run out of town if I even recommend this thing. So economic developers are gatekeepers into their communities, and just as much as they are, you know, champions of their communities. But the end goals, if you just strip all of that away, economic developers are charged with attracting businesses, which means attracting more employment opportunities, increasing the overall economic well-being of a community, not only pushing higher skilled jobs with better wages and therefore allowing for more disposable income, but also making sure that the other folks that maybe don't have those specialized skill sets are not forgotten about, right? There's a whole concept within economic development called BRNE, Business Retention and Expansion. We're primarily focused in this podcast on the attraction side, which is bringing in a brand new company, a brand new industry. But an economic developer has to always keep themselves honest about looking at their communities and determining what is the best new thing that we can bring in. We don't want new entries into the market to upset those mom-and-pa shops or those existing incumbent industries to the point where it harms the community, right? You don't want to crowd out the industry sectors in your community such that you've actually, even though on the surface, you know, the dollars per hour seem to be great for what they're paying, but you've impacted the community in such a negative way that things start to unravel. So there's job creation. There's capital investment, right? Like I mentioned before, new investment leads to new taxes. New taxes go into more government services, building out new roads, maintaining existing roads, building schools. Existing schools need to be upgraded, right? All of the things the government does have to be funded in some way. And while business retention and expansion goes a long way. In fact, even though I'm an attraction expert, right, on my end, I would say that you have to take care of your house and get it in order, because the majority of new taxes are going to come from expanding businesses within your communities. But the attraction side, if done right, can create a catalytic effect that can supercharge those efforts. And so new capital investment, whether it be from an existing firm that's expanding or a new firm to town, that creates more tax base and therefore better government services to take care of the community in general. So you've got job creation that economic developers have to be focused on. You've got capital investment. Overall, this is called wealth generation, increased income and tax revenue. And all of this goes into a better quality of life, better infrastructure, better amenities, services. Now, how is this done? Economic developers, I kid you not, economic developers are the unsung heroes behind community growth. Plain and simple. There's no question about it. They are the liaisons between the private sector and the public sector to ensure that their community grows at the clip in the way that community is positioned to grow. And so beyond just, you know, attracting investments by responding to RFIs or listening to their business communities, economic developers have a very hard job, right? They develop strategies for sustainable growth. They work to revitalize neighborhoods by taking a look at broader strokes and coordinating with utilities and with government services and nonprofits and existing companies. They collaborate, like I said before, between businesses and government. It is a job that could very easily be a 24/7, 365 gig. And I've been there, right? It's not just about making the promises in an RFI. It's about following through on those promises and ensuring that you are consistently keeping the finger on the pulse of your community to ensure that whatever you're going after is the right fit. These days, when I first started, you know, 10, 12 years ago, it was primarily that economic developers were focused on job creation, job training, investment, maybe some land use matters. But now economic developers are pulled into discussions around broadband and fiber, pull in discussions around childcare, about workforce, the brain drain. How do you continuously ensure that new folks are coming to the community? It's about rails and trails. It's about, I mean, the amount of topics that economic developers are required to be experts in is mind-blowing. It is daunting. And so while site selectors, and this is another thing to mention, site selectors seem to always be looked upon as the, well, there's a relationship dynamic, right? Because site selectors are the gatekeepers to corporate investment, to a lot of corporate investment, I think a lot of economic developers and site selectors see them as being in the position of primacy, right? They are the ones with the harder jobs, with the, you know, they need to have more respect. I would argue, since I've been on both sides of this, that that's the wrong way of looking at this. Economic developers, like I said, are the unsung heroes, the ones that are working day in and day out to serve their communities. And by doing so, they make those communities better places for our corporate clients to invest in. And so truly, I think we need to flip the script when we're talking about this dynamic in our industry. Economic developers should be the ones that are heralded as being in the position of primacy. And site selectors were lucky enough when we have relationships with the right economic developers to get our jobs done and to properly represent our clients. So now that we've gone through a definition of site selectors at a very high level, a definition of economic developers at a very high level, we're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, we're going to dig into kind of who these people are that end up in these positions. And we're going to get into just a little bit of the dance between these two folks. All right, and we're back. So what type of a personality or person or how does one even become an economic developer or a site selector? Right, as I mentioned at the beginning of this, I fell into the role of economic development. I was in law school. I was looking for an internship. I had the opportunity to go apply at this random agency I'd never heard of before, and it was called the Indiana Economic Development Corporation. That didn't make a lot of sense to me because it was a corporation and yet it was a government agency. And you know, I started off actually defending the IEDC against public access requests, which was very squarely within some of my state and local government law that I had been studying. But I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't even know what I was getting myself into. In fact, in that first interview that I had with the general counsel of the IEDC, at the end of it, they asked, do you have any questions? And I looked at them and I very honestly said, as you're going to find out here, I have zero filters most days. I looked at them and said, yeah, I've got a question. What the hell is economic development? Thankfully, they laughed and they appreciated the fact that I was honest, and the rest is history. But the majority of economic developers do not go to school to become economic developers. The majority of site selectors do not go to school knowing what a site selector is, right? So economic developers come from all walks of life. It might be government employees that really excel and have done a fantastic job and all of a sudden get poached over into economic development. I have seen it where there are school teachers, and trust me, school teachers, especially those that teach at the elementary school level, perfectly primed to be economic developers because managing site selectors and communities is about as tedious and difficult and hair-pulling as trying to manage a kindergarten or a first grade class full of children most days. So you can come from all different walks of life, from utilities. You can come from something totally outside, like being a teacher. It's what makes the industry so fascinating because there is no one shoe fits all, right? But the problem then is you have all of these folks who are coming in and there is formal training, but typically that training comes after you've joined and you start taking some courses through the International Economic Development Council or through your own state's offerings, and you start to understand those fundamentals. But you're typically taking somebody who is a blank slate candidate and training them up. And so across the country, economic developers come from a variety of backgrounds, which leads to very different flavors of economic development offices. And again, why do relationships matter? Because as a site selector, if I'm trying to interact with an economic development group in Northwest Nevada, they very likely have a very different background and way of doing things compared to maybe an economic development group in the Atlanta, Georgia region, right? And so economic developers, very broad, very divergent in their backgrounds and how they get into it. Site selectors, I like to say there's a whole host of flavors when it comes to site selectors, right? Site selectors as consultants that help navigate the data and the process. You might be dealing with site selectors that come from or are embedded within an accounting firm, from a law firm, through a commercial real estate firm. There's even engineering firms that have site selectors, development groups that have site selectors. And then there's also these boutique shops that all they do is they focus on site selection. It's not just one business practice, right? And all of us approach a project differently, right? One site selector who is embedded within an accounting firm will approach a project in a very different way than somebody who is embedded within a commercial real estate firm. And again, that's where the relationships matter. If Devin was a site selector embedded within one of the big four accounting firms, if I was embedded within one of those, I would very likely have a very different approach to how I approach site selection versus I work in a commercial real estate firm and I approach it a very specific way that's tailored to and rooted within commercial real estate. And so how does an economic developer learn to navigate and work with these site selectors when they come from so many different backgrounds? It's about building the relationships, right? You've got very different flavors. You've got different personalities. Trust me, I am probably the least typical standard industrial broker site selector you're ever going to come across. So just like in economic development, site selectors come from a whole host of backgrounds as well. Typically, they grow up through their own kind of profession, right? You'll start as an accountant and you'll start working your way up. You may get into some taxes and credits, advisory work, and then all of a sudden you find yourself on this specialized team where you're helping companies make decisions. Or you might be in a role like myself where you are an economic developer and your personality and just the way that you approach things make sense for you to make the jump from one side of coin to the other, like I have. And so how do these two professions work together? The dance between them, right? So now we're going off to the dance in this dating relationship. There is, and there has to be, a significant amount of collaboration. Site selectors and economic developers, as I will continue to say, we are just two sides of the same coin. We have to work together collaboratively. But because of that deep-rooted collaboration, we have to remember that there's always going to be tension, right? There's always going to be tension. We have to balance, I have to balance my business, my client's interests, my client's business interests with the community impact that my client's decision will have. And that is not always easy. An economic developer has to balance the need to bring in higher paying and diverse sets of jobs into the community with what other sorts of impacts would that eventual landing of a new company have on their community. And so we're always looking for win-win scenarios, right? An ideal outcome, like I've been saying, is a business finds a perfect site, a perfect community for exactly what they're looking to do. And the community has to benefit. There's going to be give and take. The community is going to be asked to abate taxes. The community is going to be asked to work their tails off to create a new training program, right? In return, the company needs to make good on their promises to create a certain amount of jobs, to make a certain level of impact on that community. At the end of the day, if we can keep ourselves honest, focus on the data, have those candid conversations early and often, we should be able to find a win-win scenario. But it's tough, right? There's a lot of challenges. In the teaser, the trailer to this, I said, why does this all have to be so damn secretive? Well, confidentiality on both sides. Like I said, I started off defending an economic development corporation against public access requests. Confidentiality is one of the most critical aspects of economic development site selection. And that's difficult when you're talking about the intersection between public and private sectors, because the public sector, the public, deserve to know exactly. I also have my fiance out there, so if you hear her talking, I'm going to figure out how to make this a little bit better for quality's sake. But you have to figure out how to work with each other, collaborate, and work through the tension when you have challenges, even though you have to be confidential when talking to each other. The most fun aspect to a site selection project for me is coming up with the confidential code name, right? You're not going to say that you're working for and that Toyota is looking at the community. You're going to say that project, I'm looking around my desk here, Project Paperclip is looking at the community, right? And so the community only knows that they are negotiating with and talking to and responding to RFI requests from Project Paperclip. And they know that it's a manufacturer. They might know it's in the automotive industry. And they might know how many jobs and the investment amount and a certain number of details so that they can respond appropriately or decide if they want to respond. But in return, the site selector is trying to get information out of the community that is also confidential, right? A lot of utilities are not able to talk about their not yet approved expansion plans because that is a highly confidential matter until they get in front of the right regulatory authorities. So how do you navigate between these two sides and come, how do you find the truth when both sides have to hold their cards back a little bit, right? Companies cannot put it on blast. Toyota can't put it on blast that they're looking to build a brand new automotive equipment manufacturing location, an OEM, because it is such a competitive industry, and they can't allow their competition to know what they're thinking and what they're doing, right? The margins are razor thin for these guys. And so they have to operate in a Kladenstein manner. Communities are likely pitching the same site to multiple prospective companies. And you can't go ahead and talk about one company's potential plans to another when talking about the same site, because then you're putting yourself in a position where you're not going to be trusted. So there's a lot of competing priorities and a lot of tough decisions that have to be made. But the takeaway for this podcast and for this theme, or for this episode in particular, demystifying site selection, is we need to appreciate the complexity. We have to appreciate the complexity that, you know, site selection and economic development involve intricate processes. They truly do. And community matters. Behind the data, there are real people and real places and real decision makers who go home to their families every night and hope they've made the right decision. And so despite the fact that data and confidentiality and complexity, it's all there, the reason I wanted to start this podcast is because the better our relationships are across the divide, you know, between the front and the backside of the coin, the better we can navigate and find that truth. Because at the end of the day, site selectors are people too. Economic developers are people too. And despite the tensions that can arise, picking up the phone and knowing the other person, knowing how many kids they have, how they're doing, right? Building those relationships are what's going to matter, because the end result is going to be better for our communities. It's going to be better for our corporate clients, and it's going to make for a stronger economy and overall community in this country as possible. So I want to end this by just issuing a huge thank you to all of the professionals in this industry, to all the site selectors out there that burn the midnight oil, reviewing all of the data and navigating and managing their clients, to all the economic developers that do a yeoman's job at keeping, you know, both ends pulled together every day and making sure that the decisions they make are best for their communities, and working day in and day out to ensure their communities are the best version of themselves they can be. So I know that, you know, I'm probably going to have 5 people listen to this first podcast, but I'd like to hear your thoughts. I'd like to hear some questions that you may have. And I'm going to work as hard as I can to make this an interactive podcast. I want to hear from you. I want to answer questions, bring up any sort of excellent salient points that are raised throughout the podcast. And you know what? We're also going to have some experts come on, some folks that I have very strong relationships with, and we're going to have some fun. Because when I start, you know, I'm not just sitting here talking to the wall, you know, staring at a microphone, and I actually get to have a conversation with somebody. I think that's where we're going to have some laughs, because like I said, guys, I don't have a filter, except for when it comes to confidential matters, right? But otherwise, I'm a dude sitting here on a Friday afternoon in jeans, in a polo, and quite frankly, I'm probably going to throw on some sweats and take my dog for a walk. My brand new little puppy who is the dog that I'm holding in the artwork, the cover artwork for this podcast. His name is Archer, by the way. He's 4 months, almost 5 months as of this recording. He is a poodle pit bull mix, which we're trying to figure out. I guess that's a patoodle or a pitty boodle. But you know what? We're going to explore exactly what we're going to call this dog on throughout this podcast as well. So thank you so much for listening. Next time, we are going to dig into navigating this partnership, the site selector and economic developer partnership. And I'm going to work on having better, soundproofing in the room, and work on the music that's going to be played. So stick around. This is going to be one hell of an adventure. And I really hope that by the end of it, whenever there is an end, that you look back on it and go, you know what? I really learned a lot, not only about the profession itself, but about myself and the people that I deal with. So once again, folks, Devin Hilston Smith, and don't forget, site selectors are people too. See ya. Just a heads up, views expressed in this podcast are solely my own and are not attributable to any employers, whether past or present. Thank you.